This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're here live on Pet Life Radio. Had to join us a little bit later. And we're talking with Sonia, and her 15-year-old poodle has kidney failure. So also would like to know what the values are, because understand, there is kidney disease and there's kidney failure. And I want to know what the specific gravity of the urine, and are the kidneys working at all? And how high the BUN is, blood, urine, nitrogen. What the status is when we're better hydrated, and mostly creatinine and phosphorus. Creatinine is the value that is the most indicative of the kidney function. BUN can be affected by diet. It can be affected by hydration status at the time of the test. So there are other factors involved. But again, as a 15-year-old dog, it wouldn't surprise me that there is some degree of kidney disease. And whereas once the kidneys start to really fail, then they become anuric. So they go from urinating excessively to not urinating at all. The kidneys are shut down and stop making urine. The BUN and the creatinine fly high. Then it's time to say goodbye. I mean, it's tough. But as I said, I've been working with some dogs now, literally including my sister-in-law's dog. We have we've been keeping this dog going for now almost a year with just fluids, kidney diet. It can be done. Now, Cloud Chaser, Dalmute has dilute urine, see an internist, no Cushing's blood work, normal, drink excess amounts of water. Okay, so that the diseases that would cause a very, what we call PUPD, excessive drinking, excessive peeing. Well, you already mentioned Cushing's, so that blood work is normal. Diabetes, there are two kinds of diabetes, understand. There's diabetes mellitus, which is sugar diabetes. And then diabetes insipidus, and that is the diabetes, it's water diabetes, where they just like to drink. And they have to because the kidneys aren't reading the body, and every bit of water that goes in comes out of the urine. So the urine is very dilute. Now, with kidney failure or kidney disease, the urine is isocyanuric. And that means the isocyanuric range is 1.008. to 1.012, we call it 10.8 to 10.12. Animals with diabetes insipidus, they can get it back to 1.002, 1.004. In order for the kidneys to do that, they have to work. So when you have that, if you can get below, lower, more dilute than 10.8, okay, then actually the kidneys might be fine. It might be diabetes insipidus, and there's some tests to do that as well. So, but if BUN and creatinine are high, very high, then we're looking at a kidney disease. And so that's but if the blood work is normal, then maybe it's not kidneys. Then you look at just a bladder infection. So a regular blood test, except the urinalysis, usually won't tell you about the diabetes insipidus, because you can look at the alkaline phosphatase or do a Cushing's test. You can look at the BUN and creatinine. They're normal. It's probably not kidney. Okay. If the glucose is normal, it's probably not diabetes. So what you're left with is either, which we see in a lot of young dogs, we call it is psychogenic polydipsia. They're drinking a lot just because they like to drink. And what happens when you drink a lot? You pee a lot. Happens to us. Go out with the guys and have a bunch of beers one night. You're going to pee a lot. So it's the same thing. They're just overloaded. They like to drink. And we see this more, though, in large breed, but young dogs. So if it's an adult dog, and his sugar is normal, BUN and creatinine are normal, right? The Cushing's is negative, alkaline phosphatase is normal. It's probably not psychogenic. I would test for diabetes insipidus next. We call it DI. All right. Hello. Gerald, how are you? Liz Joy, hi. Had a cytology. When you say had a cytology of what? Give me some more information. All right. Okay. Liz Joy, hi. I hope we don't. Your favorite? I mean, oh, that's nice. Thanks. No one calls me favorite. You're like, the only ones that call my favorite are my patients. I think I'm their favorite. So, okay, any more? Oh, so if we're not going to do that, I want to talk about Halloween for now. I also want to talk about Well, I'm seeing a lot of cases lately, which is very bizarre, of seizing dogs, dogs that are having seizures. It's uncharacteristic. I always see dogs. You'll have that middle-aged dog that comes up with epilepsy out of the blue. One of my son's dogs is an epileptic, is a puppy. Well, not puppy, he's a young dog. He's a little over a year now. But they knew when he adopted him, this golden retriever, that one of the reasons he was brought in was because he was having multiple seizures as a puppy. He was like 10, 11 months of age. So I wanted to talk about that because there are a lot of things out there that can cause seizures. And especially when I see seizing in a much older dog, it's not typical. I will never say never, but there I said it, but I should never say never. That when you have older dogs that start to seize, you need to start looking elsewhere. If it's a middle-aged dog, the blood work, everything is normal. In between seizures, he's 100% normal. Then I'm thinking epilepsy. And I don't even treat the first seizure. I wait, because if the next seizure happens 4 months later, and the next one after that 4 months later, I'm not going to treat. Why? Because even with treatment, you're still going to get 3 or 4 seizures a year. But if they come more frequently than that, then yes, I will put on medication. Then there's a big question of which medication. I mean, I'm a good old-fashioned guy. I still like phenobarbital. One of the new hot ones that's hitting the market now, everybody's recommending it, which is good, is called Keppra, levetiracetam acetum. Say that 10 times fast. Keppra is very good also, but I talked to a friend of mine, a colleague, my former neurology professor resident when I was in vet school, and he was finishing up his residency, and he's board certified neurologist. And we had a long conversation about this about 2 months ago, and he still likes phenobarbital. And one of the things that I did not know, but I learned, I thought was cool, that yes, if when you get to a higher number of seizures, okay, then you give more phenobarbital, you get to the point where the phenobarb starts, obviously it also has a depressive effect, okay? It sedates them. So you're getting such a sedated dog, people don't want to use it because then you got a zombie on your hands. What's the point? So they're going and they're adding Keppra, which is fine. But one thing that I learned, okay, from Dr. Rick, is that over time, the dogs seem to get so accustomed to the phenobarb, the high dose, they lose that reactive, that sedative reaction, and they just get the anti-seizure. So that's good to know. But we have to, whatever we use, you have to monitor. What we talk about Cushing's, and one of the things we look for in Cushing's disease is as a first step is one of the blood tests is called alkaline phosphatase. Well, guess what? Alkaline phosphatase elevates when dogs have Cushing's. Why? Because it goes up when dogs are on steroids. And what does Cushing's do? Cushing's secretes its own steroids in the body. So it's as if we're giving too much steroid. But guess what other drug also elevates the alkaline phosphatase is phenobarbital. So whenever I see an elevated alkaline phosphatase, am I jumping amazing first thing to Cushing's? Not necessarily. I want to get a little history. I want to know what drugs the animal's been on. Okay. And what, you know, with the behavior, what is the urine like? So if we have, what does the dog look like? Does it have that classic Cushing's, bloated abdomen, round, thin skin, thin hair, right? Or not? If it doesn't, then it probably may not be Cushing's. So, if everything else is normal, yes, we test for it anyway to rule it out. But we have to, you got to sometimes think out of the box. When you're dealing with these cases, when you're dealing with multi-systemic diseases that cause multi-systemic dysfunction, you really have to start, it's like playing chess. You got to really think of it all. You got to really look at everything and decide, you know, would that be the norm? You don't just run and rush it to start testing. You got to really plan it out, get a good history, and do a really, really, really thorough physical and ask all the right questions. So if you have these doctors that you come in for vomiting and all they want to do is start testing, I hate saying this, I'd find another doctor. I was involved in a sting years ago, and I came in and I had no idea what it was being done by investigative reporters. And they called me and asked me if I would take a look at some pets. They wouldn't give me any history, anything. Just, I said, of course. So guy comes in with a French bulldog and the complaint is vomiting. Okay. I said, well, give me more. First of all, I'm looking at this dog who wouldn't hold still for a second. He can't be that sick. So I said, started asking questions. When does he vomit? Oh, he vomits oftentimes late night, early morning. Okay, French Bulldog, late night. Okay, what comes up? Is it the food he ate for dinner? No. It's usually just yellow bile. Oh, well, now we're talking about something totally different. So we have a happy dog that's eating, that's pooping, can't sit still, right? Running around my exam room. He vomits, yellow bile, late night, early morning. Am I worried about this dog? Not a bit. So I say, this is something very common in Frenchies. And it's a gastric reflux, kind of like our heartburn. And what happens is, since we're vertical and that gastric juice comes up and burns us right here, we call it heartburn. Nothing new with the heart. But when your patient is horizontal and it keeps coming, what comes up? That yellow bile, stomach juice, whatever. And so I told them, a couple of things we can try. One is a late night feed. So take about a third to a quarter of dinner, okay, and set it aside. And maybe 10 p.m., give them a half of a Pepcid or Prilosec. And then 10, 15 minutes later, give him that remaining meal. Let's see how he does. He did great. So now, postscript, I find out the reason why they brought this dog to me is because they had been to another veterinarian with the exact same. He never put a hand on the dog, never asked questions, and wanted to run up $1,000 worth of workup, right? X-rays and blood tests. It's like, are you kidding? So anyway, no, I'm not going to mention any names, but I'm just telling you, when any veterinarian, any of your docs is so hasty to start running and you don't even see them ask you a ton of questions about the history and how this happened and when it happened and what happens between these episodes, that's very important stuff to know. And then doesn't put a hand on the dog, then I'd be a little nervous if I were you. So anyway, all right, Halloween, before we go, the basics. You got to watch out for the candy. Dogs eat a little chocolate, that's fine. But if that chocolate is one of those chocolate bars, like a Baby Ruth, has raisins in it and nuts and all that caramel and sugar, that could be a problem. So, and do you think they have the dexterity to take that candy out of the wrapper? Heck no. They're eating everything. And if there's string or a stick or it's a lolly, whatever it is, they're not selective on what goes into their mouths. So the safe part is to just avoid the candy. You don't know if something is sugarless and it's treated with xylitol. You don't know if it has raisins or certain nuts. There are so many things that could go bad. One chocolate bar, milk chocolate especially, is probably not going to hurt your dog. But if you hit the six pack, yes, that could be really bad. Now, other things, costumes. It might be cute, but if you're going to put your dog on a costume, test it first and make sure that he or she is okay with it. Make sure it's not occluding their vision. Make sure it's not occluding their motion, okay? If you really want to put a costume on a dog, put a bandana on him or her, but be really, really careful. Now, let's talk about trick-or-treaters. Let's say if your pet is home and responds negatively to a doorbell ringing when someone comes over, can you imagine the stress and anxiety if the doorbell is ringing every 10 minutes or 3 minutes? Okay, so if you have one such dog, why don't you put him in a safe room? A room, music on, locked up, so he doesn't get crazy every time the doorbell rings. Think of another thing. Let's say you have a dog that likes kids. Okay, hopefully your dog likes kids. But those beings, those creatures coming to the door, they don't look like kids, do they? And they may sound like a kid. They may smell like a kid, but they don't look like a kid. So what's happening is that even the nicest dog, the sweetest dog that plays and licks their faces of normal kids, might get freaked out with this. And you never know, could take a little snap. So, and the same thing as you're walking with your dog, if you take your dog with you trick-or-treating, you're approaching a group of beings, whatever they are, and they don't look normal to that dog. Dogs are amazing and facially recognizing. So then you might have a problem there and they might, again, try to bite. So my recommendations, keep the dog separate. Make sure they're wearing ID collars. Make sure they're microchipped in case they should get away. Some dogs might try to run. And give them their own quote-unquote Halloween treat that they can sit in a room and gnaw and chew on it as much as they want. with a music on or TV on, whatever it is. Don't let them hear all that crazy shenanigans going on in the front part of the house. And don't let them see all those crazy kids dressed up in costumes that they don't recognize. And you can all have a nice, safe Halloween. By the way, leftover candy. Dr. Jeff or Dr. Deb. I'm just kidding. I'm trying to stay away from it. I know already that when I buy Halloween candy, I don't do this. I should buy candies that I don't like. So when there's leftover, I'm not going to eat them. No, what do I buy? Because I know there's going to be leftover and I'm probably going to eat them. But anyway, that's since I'm not going trick-or-treating anymore, I got to have some joy out of this Halloween party anyway. All right. So we're good. I think I want to make sure I got every last question in. There was no TI. Oh, salvage bladder. There's no UTI. So if no UTI, not, I would test for diabetes and stuff. If the water is really that excessive, I would look for a urinary specific gravity. And if it's not Cushing's, Cushing's normal. It's not diabetes. Blood sugar is normal. It's not a urinary tract infection. That's normal. Okay. And it's an older dog, probably not diabetes insipidus. I mean, psychogenic. It might be diabetes insipidus. That would be my next thing to go after. Okay. That's sushi too. Very nice. All right. Signs of a dog seizure. Oh, that's great. So signs of a seizure really are basically that they will, there are number of types. That's a great question. Thank you so much. You would normally think a dog seizure that hit the ground, they tonic-clonic convulsive seizures, and that you could just can't miss it. Don't try to open their mouth. They're not going to swallow their tongue. So never stick your finger or get near a dog because they could bite. They're not there. They're in seizure land. They are very, very depressed afterwards. Okay. Called the post-ictal phase. They get whacked out. They're so tired. Now, but one thing I'll tell you, I had a case, a little Papillon years ago, and it went through these phases of just like shivering, shaking episodes, little twitching for lasted, I don't know, not even a minute. But they were happening with some frequency. So what do? I call my friend, Dr. Rick LeCouter. Rick, at the time, he had left Davis. He had finished. He was at Colorado State. So he's now back at Davis. Now he's emeritus, but he's still my go-to guy. So then I called Rick. I said, Rick, I have this case. It's weird. But it's not seizing at all. It's just like shivering, shaking. He goes, if everything else is normal, it could be a seizure. And I go, seizure? No, it's not a seizure. You taught us that dogs never had petit mal seizures, middle of small. They only had grand mal seizures, where they really tonic-clonic convulsive seizing. At which point he says, well, I taught you wrong. So they did discover, yes, dogs can have petit mal seizures, and they can manifest in any weird way, any weird behavior that's cyclical, that happens a lot. And whether it is just a shivering, shaking, twitching episode, that could be a seizure. So if it's happening frequently, think about treatment. Talk to your vet. Okay. Marla, oh my gosh, how are you? Go Dodgers. I like that, JB. Don't let New York Yankee hear you see that. All right. So, yes. So the DDAVP, yes, that's what you want to do. The thing is, it's pretty expensive stuff. The old-fashioned way, we did a water deprivation study, but it's not easy. You got to plan up to it. You got to limit water for about a week before just based on their need. And then you got to go 24-hour water deprivation where you actually monitor their specific gravity, et cetera. DDAVP is the newer way to do it. The thing is, you got to buy the stuff and it's super expensive. And if you're just doing it for one test, unless the vet keeps one on hand, unless you take, you know, just a couple of drops that you need, but the DDAVP supplies what's missing. And then if you have a dog with very low specific gravity and has diabetes insipidus, you give them DDAVP, then they will concentrate urine normally. There's your diagnosis. So yes, I would do that. Okay, great. So thanks for joining me. Thanks for letting me run a little over. We had to make up some time for Mark's show. And if you have any questions during the week or any issues, please reach out to me. And I will be happy to answer them if I can. If not, I always say, if I don't have the answer, I will get you the answer. And that's one thing I enjoy doing. So, have a really safe Halloween. Seriously, just be careful with the candy, the wrappers and stuff like that, the string. Will your pets dress? I do not dress my pets for Halloween. I do not take them out. I don't trust them. They're difficult enough. just walking without Halloween when they see other dogs or certain people. So they've created such a pack. There are five of them, and they are impenetrable. And actually, I have a six here now because my son's out of town, and he didn't leave his golden with me, but he left his Frenchie with me. So now I have two Frenchies and my four other dogs. So we have six Frenchies, well, six dogs now, but they're going to pick him up today. So, but it wasn't instant. It's uncertain. When my kids come over with their dogs, it takes a little while for them to sort of, you know, kind of get used to each other. Since my son comes over the most with his dog, Carlos fits right in. Carlos is amazing. He's the greatest little Frenchie. So he's great. My oldest daughter can come by with Quinn, and he's great. Lucy is so wild, her other dog, that Quinny works great. Quinny is fine. So I do not take my dogs out. And I'm not a huge fan. I don't know. I never did. I always had dogs. And when I was a kid, we used to go trick-or-treating. And yeah, my cavities can prove it. But we never took dogs with us. All right. Okay. So I think we are good. I want to make sure I got to every Hershey and Reese's are good. They sure are. My favorite though really is Snickers. Snickers and peanut M&M's. I really like. Oh, I like Mounds too. And Almond Joy. I love that chocolate coconut combo. Did I make sure? I just want to make sure I got all your questions, everybody. Good. All right. I think we're good. I don't want to bore you. I'm just going to make sure I acknowledge everybody who came to join me. All right. So hope you all have a great week. Have a fun, safe Halloween coming up this Thursday. And I will see you here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. And thank you so much for joining me. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.